The Hoop Heads podcast is brought to you by Head Start Basketball.
At one point, I asked him, well, how long would you work on that particular fundamental? And his response was immediate. He said, until. And once I went back to my hotel room and thought about that, that really is why Kobe is who Kobe is, because he works on it until he masters it. He doesn't work on it until he an hour is up. He doesn't work on it until he gets 50 shots in. He doesn't work on it until it's time to go to the movies. You know, all these things that we can put in that will do something until something else pops up. No. For him, it's just, I'm going to do it until I master it.
Kevin Eastman is an international corporate and sports team speaker who spent 13 years in the NBA. His roles included being VP of basketball operations and an assistant coach for the Los Angeles Clippers. Kevin was also an assistant coach for the 2008 NBA champion Boston Celtics under coach Doc Rivers. In addition to his time in the NBA, he served as the national director for the Nike Basketball Skills Academies, spent 22 years as a college coach, and 4 years as a college director of athletics. Over his 40 years in the game of basketball at the collegiate and professional levels, Kevin Eastman has studied what makes the best the best: their habits, mindsets, strategies, and everyday choices. Known as a thought leader in the basketball and sports worlds, Kevin is now an engaging speaker who inspires a wide range of audiences, from sports teams to diverse corporate groups. What sets Kevin apart from many other speakers is that he has lived in the world of the best while observing and studying them every day. His curiosity and dedication to learning provide the backdrop for delivering powerful talks on leadership, culture, teamwork, and why the best are the best. I guarantee you're going to want to take a few pages of notes as you listen to this episode of the Hoopheads podcast with Kevin Eastman, author of the book, Why the Best are the Best. Check out the show notes if you're interested in purchasing the book. It will be money well spent. Please enjoy our conversation with Kevin Eastman. Hello and welcome to the Hoopheads podcast. It's Mike Klinzing here without my co-host Jason Sunkel today, but we are pleased to be joined by Coach Kevin Eastman. Kevin, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you. I'm looking forward to it.
So we want to start by talking a little bit about your book, Why the Best are the Best. And I'd like to begin by asking you how difficult it was to pare down your list of 25 power words that champions believe in. What was the process for coming up with those 25 words?
Well, like any process, it started at the start, the seed of the thought to do something. And this book, probably, even though I wrote it in a short period of time, I've probably written it in my head over 35 plus years in the game as a player and a coach. So the process itself started by, the more I thought about the best of the best and all the reading that I did, whether it be books, articles, watching YouTubes, watching interviews, or just sitting down with these people face to face and having a discussion, certain words and mindsets and habits were consistent across the board with all of the best of the best. So as I started to really think about that, I just sat down one day. I was actually in Oklahoma City. We were playing the Thunder. And I sat down and I wrote every word that I could think of that I've heard in all these interviews and discussions and whatnot and books. And I came up with some common ones. Well, the first list was 92 words. And no one wants to read a book that thick. Certainly... most of us anyway. So eventually I pared it down because some of them were similar, some of them were in the same family. So I pared it down to 25. And of course there were always ones, even as I go back and look at the book now, should I have put this one in instead of that one? So that's kind of how I did it. And then the prompting of actually writing it came from my wife, Wendy, who had kind of been on me about, okay, you keep talking about this book. Why don't you just sit down and write it? Sometimes, you know, I guess it's best to say that the best advice comes from real close to you. But because you hear that voice every day, maybe you don't pay attention to it as much. But in that particular case, she was right. And now, I've accomplished one of my life goals.
What was the toughest omission? Which word was the one that was number 26 that you left out? Is there one that... you know, you keep coming back to, you're like, oh, maybe that should have been the one that was in?
Well, I don't know that I have any order other than the first word, because my editor and publisher and I kept going back and forth. They kept wanting to put it in order. And I said, really, there's only one order, and that's what's the most important word of all success. And that is the word truth, which people can read about in the book. But probably there are two words that I really spent time thinking about whether I should put them in or not. I ended up not putting them in and tried to maybe incorporate them or weave them in at some level in the book. And the two words are depth, because what you find out with the best of the best, they go deeper into things. They go deeper into their preparation. They go deeper into their thought. They go deeper into their workouts. They do a little bit more than the average person does. So depth would be one word, and the other word is a word really that it came to me by an event I did with Kobe Bryant out in Las Vegas many years ago when he was still in the prime of his career. And to make a very long story short, at one point I asked him, well, how long would you work on that particular fundamental? And his response was immediate. He said, until. And once I went back to my hotel room and thought about that, that really is why Kobe is who Kobe is, because he works on it until he masters it. He doesn't work on it until he an hour is up. He doesn't work on it until he gets 50 shots in. He doesn't work on it until it's time to go to the movies. You know, all these things that we can put in that will do something until something else pops up. No. For him, it's just, I'm going to do it until I master it.
Yeah, I think that that's something that if you look at, again, probably across professions, across sports, that particular skill, which is just the ability to continue to drive and work and be at your best all the time, is something that I think all of the best performers, no matter where they are, I think those people all probably share that same common characteristic with Kobe. And yet at the same time, it's probably a very rare characteristic, even at the highest levels of the sport that you were at. You know, Kobe's work ethic obviously stood out even among the greatest players in the NBA, I'm sure.
No question. I mean, in the book I talk about there's a reason why the best are the best. And it's incumbent upon all of us who want to maybe reach a level that we've always dreamed of reaching or become who we've always hoped to become. We have to go to new levels, and we have to find out what are those reasons why the best became the best. And I often hear from people, especially when I do talks all around the country, both to sports teams and the majority of my talks are in the corporate world, but when I use these professional athletes, I'll always frame it by saying, look, I know a lot of you will say, well, I can never relate to Kobe Bryant. I can never relate to Kevin Garnett. I can never relate to a Steve Nash. And my point back is simply this. I couldn't relate to them either, but I wasn't concerned whether I could relate to them. I was ultra concerned if I could learn from them. So it doesn't matter where someone else is in their life, or maybe they have more athletic ability, or they're smarter. We can still learn from them. Maybe we'll never relate to them. But Kobe didn't become Kobe as soon as he came out of the womb. There were some things he had to do to truly become Kobe.
Can you explain your saying that people should be a learn-it-all rather than a know-it-all, and how that relates to what you just talked about in terms of people from all walks of life, whether it's, you know, a young kid trying to play basketball for the first time, or it's a, you know, a CEO of a corporation? How can they incorporate that particular mantra into their life?
Well, I think there's two types of people in this world. There's two types of players in this world. When I speak in the corporate world on leadership, I'll always say there's two types of leaders in this world, and one usually survives and become successful, and the others just kind of phase out. And I believe, over my observations through my life, that the ones who continue to thrive and succeed at the levels they hope to succeed at, they are not know-it-alls. In fact, they're the complete opposite. They know that they don't know it all, but they're on a constant seek and find mission to find out what it is they don't know, and then to learn what it is that they don't know. So there are know-it-alls, and I don't think they succeed, and there are learn-it-alls, and they do succeed. And if you take any of the NBA All-Stars, let's just say in my sport, all of them are very curious minds, especially when it comes to what do I need to learn, or what do I need to develop in my game to take my game up a little bit, just a notch. They know they can't jump with quantum leaps to a new level. It's just a slow progression of getting better each day. And really, that's the formula for success. It's not one pill that you take. It's how many days can you get a little bit better at what you do? And I think one of the main ingredients to doing that is to be on a constant seek and find mission to learn new things about your craft.
We talked a little bit with Coach Showalter from USA Basketball about, you know, his work with some of the U16 and U17 high school kids that are some of the best players in the country. And one of the things that he talked about was how a lot of times they're in a position where the first time they come out and work with USA Basketball, they haven't been told about some of the flaws and the holes in their game because their high school coach wants to keep them around. Their summer basketball coach has an incentive to keep them in their program. And so when they get with USA Basketball, a lot of times that's the first time that they've, you know, had the flaws and some of the things that they need to work on pointed out to them. And I know you've had some experience going out there to the October training camp this fall. So how do you relate that message to those younger players with all of your experience you've had with some of the best in the NBA?
Well, it doesn't matter the age of the player or the level of the player. Most players have a pretty good feel of what they're good at. And I think the next step is, how does what they're good at impact winning? Because I think once you understand how what you do well impacts the game, that can take your game and take your team even further. And then the second part of that, or the opposite part of that, would simply be players oftentimes maybe don't fully know what they're not doing well. And as coaches and leaders, we have to help these young people or those we are leading to understand that you have to improve in areas A, B, and C, or however many there are. There could just be one. If you really want to get to where you want to go in your job, in your career, within this team, within this organization, within this company. So we need to know why what we do well impacts our team and our environment and our organization. And then we need to learn what we don't do well in order to get to where we want to go.
Is that why truth was the number one word in the book? That if you don't have those conversations as a coach or a leader, that you're really doing a disservice to the people that you're trying to lead?
No question, as a leader, and you have to develop the relationships to the point that they're strong enough that they can withstand someone hearing the truth. Because as I often say, the truth needs three things. You need to be able to live it, you need to be able to tell it, and you need to be able to take it. And the one that you asked me about was number three, the ability to take the truth. And I know the age-old wise saying goes that the truth hurts. But I think if you were to talk to the best of the best, they will tell you the complete opposite. The truth doesn't hurt. It actually helps. Now, it may embarrass us a little bit. It may turn our ears red. It may sting us for a moment of time. But ultimately, to get to where we want to go and to become who we've always dreamed of becoming, we have to know the truth of how to get there. And that plays back to the last question. You need to find out what you're not doing well, what's keeping you back, what's impeding your progress to ultimately reach the goals that you have set for yourself. Or if you're working in say the corporate world, maybe the goals that the company has put on you. So I think it's incumbent upon all of us who truly, truly, truly want to be successful that we take the truth in, and we take it in such a way that we're almost Velcro. It's going to stick, and we're going to work on it.
How have you improved personally in your ability to deal with the truth over the course of your lifetime? Because I know that's something that, again, for the average person, when we think about that, we sometimes get uncomfortable. We don't necessarily like to tell people what they're not doing well, and a lot of times it's also difficult for us to hear it. So how have you sort of transformed the way you look at the truth over the course of time, from when you were, let's say, a high school player until where you are now in your career?
Yeah, I think it's all about resetting your mindset. So a reset of your mindset. It's how you look at things. And I can't tell you sitting here today on this podcast that I have it down 100% of the time. As a matter of fact, if Wendy were in here doing the podcast with me, or my wife, she would. You don't always hear the truth very well. I hear it. Sometimes I just don't react to it, I guess, is what I would say. But she's right. And I think it's just, you have to make a conscious decision. Do I really want to get there? Do I really want to reach that goal? Do I really want to become that person? Do I really want to become that player, that leader? And if that's true, then you can't just have interest in it. You must be committed to it. And part of that commitment has to be that you got to be willing to hear the truth about what's keeping you from getting there. Now, the best leaders in this world, they'll also tell you the truth in terms of what you're doing well and what we want you to keep doing, and how you're bringing value to our organization, and how you're impacting winning or impacting success. So the truth goes both ways. It's not always the negative things. Especially from a leadership position, it's not just the negative things we need to point out or the areas of improvement. It's also letting our people know that we value what you bring to our company. Or in sports, we value what you bring to our team. So we want you to keep doing that. But now let's take it personal. To get to where you want to go with your career, these are one, two, or three things that we continue to need to develop.
So one of the things you talked about in the book that I really liked is your concept of how to be the best inside of a room. Because I just took that and it really cemented something that probably I didn't do very well when I was younger, and I feel like I'm much better at it now. And can you explain a little bit about what you meant and go through those five pieces that it takes to be the best inside of a given room?
Yeah, and I don't know which one particularly. Some people ask me to rank them. I don't know that I rank them as much as I try and challenge myself each and every room I walk into. Can I be the best in the room at the following things? Number one, the most prepared person in that room. When I walk into that room, can I be the most prepared person in that room? Number two would be challenge myself to be the best listener in that room. Because Phil Knight, the founder of Nike, said something really profound at Nike at one point. Well, he said many profound things, but this one stuck for sure. The person who listens the best usually leaves the room with the most information. So I've always remembered that. The next thing I guess I would throw out there is to be the most prepared, the best question asker in the room. Because when you have the opportunity to ask questions, that's how you can clean up some things you are unsure of, or maybe even gain greater insight into something that was said. The next thing would be to be the best note taker in the room. So when I'm sitting down, I'm taking great notes so I can go back and review them for eternity, really. And then the last thing is I always want to be the most respectful person in the room. If someone is talking, let them finish. Rather than, you know, I often say that listening is such a skill. And when I speak to corporations on the topic of leadership, it's one of the things that we spend maybe a little bit more time on than some other things relative to what are the characteristics of great leaders. But I often ask this question, do you listen to respond or do you listen to understand? And to me, the latter is the most important characteristic of listening. Listen to understand, and that also bleeds right into what we're talking about here. When you do that, you are respecting the person that that currently has the floor, currently is speaking, and you want to understand them so that you can either reply to them, ask them a question, go deeper into that topic. But the fact of the matter is you respect them and you don't butt in to what they're saying.
Yeah, I love all five of those from a standpoint of obviously it's tremendous value for anybody who's a basketball coach or somebody who's a leader in the business world. But one of the things that I found it most valuable for besides just myself is to be able to share that with my own kids and just talk about how important those things are. You know, and again, my kids are, I have a ninth grader, a seventh grader, and a third grader, so they're not necessarily at the point where they can maybe internalize all of those things. But I just think that it's a great message to be able to share with anyone, and specifically kids, about, hey, when you go in and you're trying to learn something or you're in a situation where you're around people that you can learn from, you want to make sure that you take advantage of that opportunity.
Without question.
So let's jump to the next thing, and that is talk a little bit about how important your think time is, because I know that's one of the challenges that a lot of people who are busy find in their schedule that they just don't have time for. And I know you talked about how you have to make sure that each and every day that you set aside time to just be able to think, and explain how that's impacted you and your life and your quest to be your best.
Oh, it's everything. Because I get, and we've even talked about this, we want to learn, and learning is the absorption of knowledge from somewhere or someone else. So if we spend all of our times, all of our life just absorbing and never putting thought to those things, how are we going to be able to apply them? And how are we going to be able to make them our own and make them a part of who we are? It's just like the 25 words in the book. They may not necessarily be your words, or people who are listening, if they decide to do this, their words. But whatever words you choose, you have to put great thought to them so that they become not just words in your vocabulary, but they become words and thoughts and phrases and strategies that become how you live. It becomes who you are. So for me, I often say this. You know, people always say to me, well, I can't find the time to get all this stuff done. And I can honestly tell them, well, no one finds the time. It's not there. You can look under your bed every morning. It's not going to be there. You can look in the bathroom. It's not going to be there. Oh, yeah, I left it in the car last night when I came and parked in the garage. And you find out it's not there. To get to where you want to go, to really solidify things in your mind, you can't find time. You have to make time. You have to make time. And sometimes that means, like this morning, I got up at about 4:20 because I had some extra reading I wanted to do. I had some other things that maybe take me away from my normal daily routine. So I wanted to make sure that I, because the reading is really important to me, and I read 2 hours every single day, minimum 2 hours every single day, so that I can continue to stay alert at all. So, you know, we're all on a seek and find mission, but the average person can seek things out and find some things and maybe go to a seminar or go to a talk I give, and they can take notes. But if that's all they do and then they put them in a file and never do anything else about it, they'll never get to where they want to go. You see, the average and even the good people, they are on that seek and find mission. But where you can separate yourself to really become who you've always wanted to become and to reach those goals, where you separate yourself is not just seeking knowledge, but it's also being on a seek and find mission, but it's also thinking and applying, thinking about what you heard, thinking about what you learned, internalizing it so it becomes a part of who you are, and then applying it, because not everything we hear is going to fit us. I read so much more, so many more words than I actually put into my life, because it just doesn't apply to me. So, and the other thing, really what we're talking about here is what I call my personal success plan. And it's just something I try and do each day and for sure each week so that it keeps me on track. And this doesn't have anything to do with family time and all that. It's just what's my success plan for me to become successful in my craft, which is now speaking and conducting workshops and speaking to the corporate world, the athletic world. And think time is one of the things. The other thing is I have what I call a WILT notebook, W-I-L-T. And that notebook is WILT is an acronym for What I Learned Today. And I may hear 20 things, but maybe only one or two of them truly go into my WILT notebook. So I'm very particular about what goes in there. It has to, for me, what I believe to be the best thoughts or lessons I learned that day. And I have a personal challenge. I'm very upset if I don't have one entry every day. And then people will ask the logical next question, well, how can you put all those things into your life? Well, I don't put everything into my life, but I have them there if for some reason later on it needs to be put into my life. I'd rather have it and not use it than to never have it and never be able to use it.
How do you then go back? So after you have the notebook and you write down, you know, a thing or two every day, do you go back and review those things on a weekly, monthly, yearly basis? So a lot of times, you know, I find for myself, I'll write something down and it'll inspire me and I'll be ready to use it. And then a week later, I find that if I haven't gone back and reread it or relooked at it, that sometimes those things, as you described, kind of fall by the wayside. So do you have a process for going back and looking at what you've written down before to make sure that you haven't overlooked something that may have been important?
Yeah, what I'll do is I'm a kind of voracious note taker. So I take a lot of notes, and when I read anything, I'll highlight. And then I go back, like this morning, part of my reading was to go back over some notes that I've taken thus far this week, things that I've liked. And let's say I had 25 of them. Well, I originally highlighted the notes in yellow. And then when I went back today, the ones I really want to put into my WILT notebook, I highlighted over the yellow in a pink highlighter. So later on today, I'll insert the two or three pink highlighted items that go into my WILT notebook. So for me, I'll take the notes, then I'll reread them relatively soon, like a day or two after I've taken the notes, and I'll highlight them. And then when I read them a second time, and I try and leave them for a couple of days, then I come back and okay, for right now, this is important. And for me, one of my projects once January 1 rolls around is to go into my you can't see it, but my large file cabinet here in my office, and start to thin that file cabinet out. I'll go through some of the old articles I've saved and say, nah, this doesn't apply to me with where I am in my life right now. So hopefully I can discard that.
Yeah, I think that's an important piece to have, that process. Can you talk about what's a book that you've read recently that has really had an impact on you? If you're doing your 2 hours of reading a day, I'm sure you're getting through quite a few books on a monthly basis. So is there something that you've read recently that's really had an impact on you?
Yeah, well, first of all, I would say that my reading is just not solely in books. It's in articles, it's blogs, it's wherever I can learn. And I have to watch myself, because sometimes I'll go on a crazy book binge. I'll miss out on some of the articles and blogs. A good friend of mine, his name is George Raveling, who in the basketball world just about everybody knows, but very well respected, one of the most powerful people in our sport. And he's now devised a reading plan where he's going to, throughout the week, get X amount of hours on article reading, X amount of hours on blog reading, and X amount of hours on book reading. And I'm not that detailed just yet, but the book I just finished was The Obstacle is the Way by Ryan Holiday. And it basically talks about that failures, mistakes, obstacles, your mindset should be such that it's not an impediment to get you where you want to go. It's actually the way you most fruitfully get to where you want to go. So that one I'm just about done. It's been out for a while. Ryan's a terrific writer. He's got three really good books out. Ego, The Ego is the Enemy is one.
Yeah, I just picked that one up yesterday or the day before, and I haven't started it yet, but looking forward to getting into that one for sure.
Yeah, it's a great concept. You know, I've had a chance. I was out in Austin, Texas, where Ryan lives, a few weeks ago, and I do what I always do. I try and get together for coffee with people who I can learn from, and he's fantastic. I'm now reading his book, which is kind of a, not so much, I don't know that I'm going to learn a lot from it that I can apply, but it's a good, interesting read called Conspiracy. So at some point, I guess I have to get off the Ryan Holiday kick and get back into some other authors.
There you go. Kevin, can we wrap this up with maybe your favorite NBA story from the book that you could maybe share with some of our listeners? Is there one that stands out that was your favorite that you included as part of the, you know, as part of the book?
Well, it might be the one that we started the book out with. And I went back and forth with the publishers and the editors. I wanted to actually make it the very first chapter of the book, and that's where Doc is in the locker room in September of late September, early October of 2008, the year we actually won the championship. The very first words out of his mouth, we were all sitting in the locker room in our practice facility in Waltham, Massachusetts, about 17 miles or so from downtown where the Boston Garden is, where we play our games. And that year we had traded, and in the trade, we got Kevin Garnett, we got Ray Allen as an addition to our team. We got another valuable player that no one talks about that arguably could have been as valuable as those two I just named. His name is James Posey. He's now coaching in the league. So the players are in there, and they're seated in U-shaped fashion around the locker room. And Doc was at the open end of the U, at the front of the room. And he walks in, and, you know, other than his first, what's up, guys, this was our first meeting really coming together, to kind of talk about how we foresee 2008 playing out with this particular group in the locker room. And he said, guys, I just want to say something as I start this out. I believe we have enough in this locker room to win the NBA championship this year. And boom, you talk about a leader getting the ears, the eyes, the heart, and the mind of those he leads. Everybody snapped up. And everybody was leaning forward on their chairs, because that's usually not said, but it was said with such conviction, and you could see it in the veins in his neck and the intensity in his eyes, and you could feel it that he really believed this. And I personally believe that was one of the most important parts of us, ingredients of us winning the championship. To let them know early on, because the most powerful words a leader can say to somebody is, I believe in you. Those four words are critically important for those we lead to hear, but only if you really believe it. And our guys believed it, because you could see Doc believed it. We weren't sure how we were going to get there. We were not going to blast it out in front of every media person in Boston or around the country that followed us that year, or for that matter, around the world. We became such a popular team. But within those walls and around that U-shaped locker room and where they sat, we left that meeting really believing that we, in fact, will win the championship in 2008.
Yeah, I think that mindset is such a huge part of success, again, especially at the higher levels. If you can get your team to buy in, and if you can get yourself as a player to believe that you can accomplish something, you're probably, you know, halfway there, to so to speak, just to be able to do that. So we appreciate you sharing that story, Kevin. I can't thank you enough for being willing to jump on and give us some of your valuable time to join us here on the Hoopheads podcast. We really had a great time talking with you. I love your book. I'm going to take some of the things and that you talked about here on the podcast, and I've already started to incorporate some of those things into the way that I go about my daily processes to make myself better. And that's something that, again, as a younger person, I didn't necessarily always do. And I think as I've gotten older, I've come to appreciate a lot of the things that you've shared in the book. And I just wanted to personally say thank you to you for A, writing the book, and then B, being so willing and gracious with your time to come on with us today. So thank you very much, Kevin. I really appreciate it.
No, the pleasure, without question, was mine, and hopefully there were a couple of things that your listeners can, if they haven't gotten the book, they can at least take from this particular podcast and insert into their jobs, their careers, or even their lives.
Can you tell people, A, how they can go ahead and get the book, and then if you wouldn't mind, if you could share out maybe how people could reach out to you if they heard the podcast and want to learn more about you?
Yeah, well, the easiest way to do both probably is to go to our website, and that's KevinEastman.net, EASTMAN. So KevinEastman.net. I'm always open to receiving emails. I used to say I'll get back to people in 24 hours, but I'm kind of getting a few more than I maybe thought I would. So I've now bumped that to 72 hours. But I get back to people, and that's Kevin@KevinEastman.net.
Kevin, thank you so much. We really appreciate it. To everyone out there, thanks for listening, and we will catch you on our next episode. Thanks. If you're enjoying the Hoopheads podcast, please think about leaving us a rating and review in iTunes or wherever you listen to the podcast. It would really help us to grow our audience and get people out there to be able to find the show a lot easier. We appreciate your help, and if you wouldn't mind, please make that rating 5 stars. If you're looking for a great way to spend the holidays playing some basketball, please join us at one of our Head Start Basketball Holiday Camps on December 27th and 28th, 2018. We'll have a camp at Hoop Guru Courthouse in Hinckley and also at St. Pascal Baylon School in Highland Heights. The Head Start Basketball Holiday Camps will emphasize the fundamentals of basketball with individual attention given to each camper. You'll improve your basketball skills and have a ton of fun at the Head Start Basketball Holiday Camp. To register or get more information, please visit our website, www.headstartbasketball.com. Thanks for listening to the Hoopheads podcast, brought to you by Head Start Basketball.